Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now that you mentioned Portland, in the context of the Clippers, the question came up, if the Clippers are not rivals, who are rivals? Or who do Memphis fans hate? Now, you probably don't hate anybody. That's not your cup of tea, really, I don't think. But is there any consensus? Like, is there anyone that we hate?
I don't think so right now. I think that stuff is born in the NBA, for better or worse. And I've talked to people like with the Grizzlies about this, who would like to see the league constructed in a way that promotes more natural rivalry. But if it is, that doesn't really happen. You don't really have, you know, the geographic rival. And so rivalries, for the most part, tend to come and go based on, you know, the history of the players on playoffs and such. And so I think those other rivalries were born in the heat of the playoffs, and I think we're currently without a rival, looking for one to create.
I mean, Portland, I ask, because Portland did break Mike Conley's face, right?
Yeah, but even Mike Conley wasn't, like, mad about that. And C.J. McCollum is such a nice guy and such a well-liked guy around the league, and there's no history there, and it was clearly accidental. And so, yeah, there's just no heat there at all.
I don't think there's any heat there. I mean, someone said Utah. It was Anthony Sane, I think, I saw, was ranking.
Yeah, I don't know. He must have some personal grudge against Utah. I don't know what that's about.
I don't see why. I mean, I actually think, to me, the most disliked team, I would say, I mean, there's a lingering Oklahoma City just because we don't like that culture of a city, right?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's a good point. That is the one that has the most staying power, because I think there's a city thing there and not just a player thing.
Right. And then I think Houston is just irritating. I think that's
right.
I don't think we like Houston particularly, even though they never played
Chris
in the past.
Chris Paul took some of it with him, right? I think that Chris Paul hate travels.
Right. But it doesn't really travel to Detroit that well, but maybe with Blake.
Right. Well, because I think the Griffin thing was so connected to Zach. Whereas
right.
I think the hatred of Chris Paul is more of a free-floating hatred, really.
Right, and it's based on a fundamentally correct assessment of his personality. And so,
right.
And then you got James Harden and that revolting game and beard and stuff. So I actually think Houston, Oklahoma City, but again, you never played Houston in the playoffs. And, like, there's nothing right with San Antonio anymore, is there?
No. I think these things come, like, down the line, and you don't know where they're going to come from. Like, maybe, you know, in a couple of years we look up and you're in a playoff series with Sacramento. And
right.
Like Jaren Jackson and Marvin Bagley are going back and forth, and that becomes something, right?
Yes, Sacramento one's on Anthony Sane's list, too, and I don't hate Sacramento. I actually kind of like Sacramento. Well, I mean, I like Dave Yeager.
There's sort of a brotherly rivalry there at the moment, right?
Right.
Because you have all the connections between the teams
with
all the former Grizzlies and Garrett Temple and the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And they almost hired Chris Wallace a few years ago.
Okay. So you had a fascinating, in fact, so fascinating that I've read most of it out loud in the first segment of the show, but a fascinating back and forth with both Mark and J.B. Bickerstaff about this question about whether you rest Mark, whether it is better to rest and to hope he heals, or whether to toss Mark out there and let him contribute what he can contribute. And what I found interesting about it was two things. One is that Mark was much more reflective about it and back and forth and sort of seeing both sides of it and actually pondering, yeah, maybe I didn't do myself or the team any good by playing the other night, but it's easy to say that in retrospect. Whereas JB was much more, you know what, we're just going to play him. JB was much, we will try to limit his the minutes or the way he plays, but he was much more just, yeah, no, we should have played him and we're going to play him. I found the whole thing with both of them fascinating. Your thoughts on your reflections on those conversations?
Well, JB said what I expected him to say, which, you know, I think was the company line and maybe just what they believe. Mark was more interesting to me because I expected Mark to say what JB said.
Right.
And he didn't. He was much more equivocal and gave much more of an impression of second-guessing the decision for him to play. I think it was his decision, by the way. I don't think – I mean, obviously the team was on board with it, but I don't think this is a case of, you know, Mark didn't want to play and the Grizzlies encouraged him to play. Like, if anything, it would have been the other way around, right? So I don't think anything like that. But I think given the way Mark has played and given how he seems to feel, I think he gave me the impression of very much questioning whether he made the right decision to play on that spring. And what I thought was interesting about it was, among other things, hey, there was the whole it's not a normal sprain. I asked him twice, like, what that meant, that he wouldn't say much other than soreness. I don't know what that means. I still don't know what that means. But I sort of asked him, like, you know, it takes longer to heal if you keep playing on it, right? And I don't know whether his math is correct, but what he basically said was, you know, you can sit down and it'll heal in 5 or 6 days, and you play on it and it'll heal in 2 or 3 weeks. So, which presents like a question for the team about the value of no Marc Gasol versus good Marc Gasol versus, you know, immobile Marc Gasol, and for various times, it's almost like an SAT question, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, you can sort of take that information if you think it's accurate and make a determination about what would have been best for the team if it's true that it will be fully healed in 2 or 3 weeks while playing on it.
Right. It was well, and then the other interesting thing is does the presence of Joakim Noah change the calculus here a little bit?
Well, Mark's minutes have lowered. If you look at like the two, you know, the pre-injury, post-injury, the minutes are the same, but they're only the same because the post-injury is 6 games and includes the pre-Noah game where he played 47 minutes in double overtime. Since then, he's down to, you know, more like 32-33, which is what it should be, but that's still 32-33 of a bad ankle. And I mean, I do think, well, I mean, are you going to win if you don't play Marc Gasol? Like, I don't know, you're losing with them. But with Noah and Jackson and Green and Caspi and Anderson, I mean, you got enough players that you can be competitive, I think, without Marc Gasol if it's no Marc Gasol versus bad Marc Gasol.
What's your inclination in terms of, I expect him to play tonight?
I fully expect him to play tonight. I do think the way Gasol answered that sort of opened the door a little bit. Like, I could easily see if he plays poorly tonight and is uncomfortable physically, I think there is a chance he sits one or both of the back-to-back. He sort of made it sound like, yeah, I'm playing, but, you know, we have new information every day, and, like, you know, your things could change. And so, yes, I'd be surprised if he didn't play tonight. He practiced yesterday. But, you know, if it doesn't get better, I mean, if both ends of a back-to-back, that wouldn't surprise me if they set it down for some of that.
Yeah. And do you have any inclination as to what the right answer is? And it's just weird because the right answer against New Orleans was to play him. The right answer against Denver was not, I guess, right?
That's basically what he said. It's like, you know, you basically said, like, I'm not good, like, in any of these games, but in some games I'm good enough to help the team. And he was New Orleans, where he did a good job defensively against Anthony Davis, and then Denver, where he didn't do a good job defensively against Nikola Jokic. And that's sort of what J.B. Bickerstaff implied, too. Like, unprompted, he said, you know, Gasol's offense is not the be-all, end-all for us. He can still anchor our defense even in his current state. And basically saying, like, he is not good offensively right now, and he's very limited in what he can do, but he can still help us defensively, and that's sort of the main reason we want him out there. You know, I don't feel like I have all the information they have. My instinct would have been to set him down for a few games. I mean, you know, a sprained ankle is something that guys typically miss a little bit of time for. You know, Brandon Ingram was out for the Lakers because their sprained ankle was going to miss a week or so. And this seems like maybe it was a fairly bad sprain. And so I think in most circumstances, the player who had the injury Marc Gasol had would have sat at least, you know, a game or two, a few days. It's just that Marc Gasol, like, doesn't do that.
Right. Thoughts on Portland?
They are not playing well right now at all, but that can change on a dime. It can very easily change tonight at FedEx Forum with Marc Gasol limited and Mike Conley's questionable with this hamstring thing. And so I even with Portland playing poorly on the road on the second half of a back-to-back, I think the Grizzlies are banged up enough that it's a coin flip game to me.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.